4CRB 89.3 FM, your radio station.
And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You this Tuesday morning. As always, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock daylight saving time. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone early. 55208888 is our telephone number. That number again, 55208888. And as we say every week, if you live south of the Tweed River, don't forget that you'll need to put 07 in front of the number. And two people who took that advice, the first of them is Ray. Good morning, Ray. How are you?
Very well, thank you, John.
That's good. How can we help?
John, a few years ago, I set up a discretionary family trust with myself as trustee and two of my grandchildren as primary beneficiaries.
Yes.
I now wish to add more family members as primary beneficiaries. Can I do that?
You need to be very careful about doing that, Ray, because if you do that, you will trigger what's called a resettlement in relation to the trust, and you could face a very substantial stamp duty bill in doing it. What I would recommend you do is get some sound legal advice from someone who practices in the area of trusts, so that you can the outcomes you want to achieve can be achieved, but perhaps by another method. So what I would suggest you do is get some sound legal advice about the trust deed and what you want to do, because if you unwittingly just add additional primary beneficiaries, you certainly do trigger a resettlement. And there are other issues involved too if the primary beneficiaries are minors as well.
Okay. So how do I find somebody that practices in that field, specialises in that field?
Right, okay. Well, look, are you in Queensland or New South Wales, Ray?
I'm at Tweed Heads in New South Wales.
Tweed Heads, okay. Well, look, you could ring the New South Wales Law Society and ask them for a recommendation to a lawyer in your locality who practices in that area. Or alternatively, you could ring the Queensland Law Society and ask them for a recommendation to a firm in Coolangatta. Trust law is not exclusively state-based, although there are some issues in relation to the jurisdiction of the trust that need to be looked at as part of that process. So so if you were to ring either the New South Wales Law Society, and I can probably give you a phone number for them. Yes, the Law Society in New South Wales is 02. Have you got a pen there?
Yeah, I'm writing it down as you
Okay. 02-9926-0333. Or you could ring the Queensland Law Society on 1300 367 757, and they would be able to give you a recommendation to a firm in Coolangatta.
Okay,
but most importantly,
great.
You need to be asking for a firm that specialises in trust work.
Yeah, okay, that's great. And a will, does a will override the trust?
The trust is completely independent of your will. So that's
right.
Another thing that is extremely important. A lot of people think that the assets in their trust, and particularly because they're the trustee of the trust, that the will just automatically covers that off. It doesn't. There will normally be a clause, a position under the trust, which is called the appointor or the principal. And now that is the person who can appoint a new trustee in the event of the trustee passing away or a need to change the trustee. But if the appointor is also the trustee, then obviously if the trustee dies, the appointor has died as well. So it's very important to look at that issue in terms of the control of the trust after you pass away, because if you want the assets in the trust to be dealt with essentially in the same way that your estate is going to be dealt with, then you need to make sure that the trust deed is tailored to your will, so that on your death the will or some other document will ensure that the trust is basically dealt with in a manner which is going to be consistent with your wishes.
That sounds great, John. And, John, a power of attorney and enduring power of attorney
yes.
are two different things, don't they?
Yes, a power of attorney is probably what's referred to in Queensland as a general power of attorney, and that is normally something that's given solely for business purposes. An enduring power of attorney, as the name suggests, is one which is used personally, so only for people, and that will endure notwithstanding the fact that you may become incompetent. Now, in New South Wales, the system is slightly different in that you have an enduring power of attorney, which is one document, and then you also need, that will deal with financial matters, but you also need to appoint an enduring guardian as well, so that the guardian can deal with your personal and health matters if decisions need to be made in that area. All right,
thank
then.
You very much for your help.
Okay, Ray, all the very best.
Thank you, bye.
And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 21 and a half minutes to 10. That's 21 and a half minutes to 11. Daylight saving time. We say good morning to Jean. G'day, Jean. How are you?
Good morning, John. Well, thank you.
How can I help you?
John, my grandson is Australian, lives in the UK, has two children by relationship over there. They're not married. Are those kiddies classed as Australian citizens? Can they have dual citizenship or what?
I think you'd have to apply for citizenship. I suspect that they're probably presently registered as UK citizens, but because your grandson is an Australian citizen, I think he can apply for them to obtain Australian citizenship and an Australian passport.
Okay. Do you have someone in your office, I believe, who deals with this sort
yes,
of thing?
Yes, yes.
I have a name and a number?
Yes, so the person that you should speak to is SF, E-S-E-F.
Hang on, say again.
SF, E-S-E-F, that's his first name.
Right.
Mirashia, M-I-R-A-S-C-I-J-A.
Right.
And if you call him on the office direct number, actually, you can ring his PA 55001329.
55001329.
Yes, her name is Tracy, and she would be able to arrange for you to see SF in relation to that. But he's highly
Brilliant.
Experienced at that. He's been practicing in that area for, I think, close enough to 20 years. He's been working for me for 15 years.
Well, there you go. That's a recommendation.
Okay, then.
Thank you so much,
Okay,
John.
Jean, all the very
Thank
best.
You.
Time continues to march along. It's just past 19 minutes to 10, 19 minutes to 11, daylight saving time, and it's time to speak to Trevor. G'day, Trevor. How are you?
Yeah, g'day, John. How are things?
Very well indeed. Thanks. How can I help you today?
I'm sorry to trouble you again, John. I rang you about 3 weeks ago. I purchased a unit at Tweed Heads.
Yep.
That was already in the rental pool.
Right.
Yes, and I can't move in until March the 19th, and I was a bit worried about the capital gains repercussions. You said there wouldn't be any there. I was thinking of extending that, instead of moving in on the 19th of March, I was thinking of extending it to include the, because I can obtain the rent, and I was going to let it go until the Easter period.
Mm-hmm.
Would there be any capital gains?
The only time there'll be capital gains issues, Trevor, is if the property actually goes up in value between the date you bought it and the date you move in. So if the property hasn't risen in value, and quite seriously, what date did you purchase and settle for the property?
I purchased on the 19th of December and settled on the 23rd of January.
Right, okay. Well, look, quite frankly, I would seriously doubt that the property would have risen in value in that period. And, in fact, Easter's early this year, so, you'll be moving in April. So I would seriously doubt that there would have been any increase in the value of the property in that period of time.
Oh, fair enough. All right, John. Thanks very much. Sorry to trouble you again.
No trouble at all, Trevor. Always a pleasure. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 17 minutes to 10 o'clock, 17 minutes to 11, south of the border. As we say, good morning to Larry. G'day, Larry. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you.
How can I help today?
Can I speak?
You're speaking to John Wright now.
Are you there, John?
I sure am. How can I help?
Yeah, John, you spoke a while ago about the Body Corp Commissioner.
Yes.
Tell me, does he handle commercial Body Corp as well as residential?
I believe they do, yes.
All right, thank you.
So do you want their number?
I can find it, I'm sure. I can get on that.
I've got the number right here if you want to take it down, if you've got a pen.
Yep, away you go.
Okay, so it's 1-800.
Yep.
060.
Yes, 0. 119. Thank you, John.
Yep.
Terrific help. Good
okay, Larry, all the very best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And we say good morning to Paula. Good morning, Paula. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you, Mr. Bradley.
How can I help you today?
Yes, I have stipulated in my will that my apartment is to be sold.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what charges that would incur.
Well, it will only incur the conveyancing fee, I would have thought. So if a lawyer is dealing with the administration of your estate, they will obviously be charging fees in relation to the administration of the estate. If your direction to your executor is to sell the unit, the executor will decide upon a lawyer to carry out that task. And it would just be the usual conveyancing fee, whatever that might be for the sale of the property. Really no different to you selling the property yourself.
All right, thank you.
And if you've lived in the property as your principal place of residence, then obviously there would be no tax implications at all in that property being sold either.
Oh, that's what I wanted to know.
Hmm.
And also, would that hold up the rest of my estate?
Only to the extent that the property was difficult to sell. So
right.
I wouldn't really think so.
Everything waits till that is sold, though?
Well, only to the extent of whatever, if your will, for example, says I divide my estate equally between my three children, the executor
right.
can obviously divide up whatever assets he can immediately access after probate, if that's required, and distribute those and make an interim distribution and then make a final distribution once the property is sold. But the property could be put on the market pretty well straight away after you've passed away, because
yes.
the executor could or the lawyers would probably put a condition in the contract that it was subject to the transmission by death of the property into the name of the executors being registered prior to settlement. So the marketing of the property could in fact start taking place even before probate of the will was obtained if it was deemed necessary to get rid of it ASAP, so certainly there wouldn't be any issues there at all, Paula. It's quite a common thing for people to want the property sold as part of the estate administration process, and I've certainly never seen it present a problem in the many estates that I've been involved with.
Yes, I thought it would be better done that way, and then if I left it to someone, they'd have to pay a lot of charges, wouldn't they? If they then sold it on, you see.
Well, if you left it to someone outright,
yes.
then the property would then, depending on whether they moved into it as their principal place of residence, it would no longer be subject. It may no longer be subject to the CGT exemption. So there may be some CGT issues on the increase in the value of the property between the date of your passing and the date they ultimately sell it. But beyond that, there wouldn't be a huge problem, I wouldn't think. Again, it's not uncommon for properties to be left to a beneficiary and for the beneficiary to either hold on to the property or to dispose of it. The one important thing is that if you do leave your principal place of residence to someone, provided the property is sold and settled, the sale is sold and or the transaction occurs and is settled within 2 years of the date of your death, then there is no capital gains tax even on the increase in value between date of death and date of settlement.
I see.
Hmm.
Thank you so much for telling me all that.
No trouble at all. All the very best.
Thank you, John.
Bye now. And for CRB, the time just rolls away, doesn't it? It's just coming up to 12 and a half minutes to 10 right here on 4CRB. That's 12 and a half minutes to 11, daylight saving time, and we say good morning to Doug. G'day, Doug. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you, Don. My question is about a will. I've got a will, and the person that is named as the power of attorney...
That'd be the executor, Doug, actually.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be your executor, not your power of attorney.
Yes.
In
the
will.
Executor, yeah. The person that is named on there and the address that is on the will, he doesn't live at that address anymore.
Right.
Is that a problem?
No. Not a problem at all. It's not uncommon, Doug, for wills to have the incorrect names of beneficiaries because, for example, people might make a will which leaves their estate to their children or to someone, and that person has remarried or has become married, so the name changes. They might have put an address in the will saying that the executor lives at Brown Street, Southport, and at date of death, the executor lives in Smith Street in Turramurra, Sydney. Doesn't cause any problems at all. So,
thank you very
much. So that's certainly not a basis upon which you need to worry about reviewing or updating your will. The circumstances where you need to consider updating your will is obviously if you remarry, because your will is automatically revoked by your marriage. Obviously, if you divorce or your partner passes away, you should consider the terms of your will and how appropriate they are. And if there's some other major life-changing event that occurs, I mean, for example, one circumstance might be if a child is going through a divorce or is in financial trouble, then you would obviously want to look at perhaps using a testamentary trust for that child rather than leaving the estate, the share of the estate to them, because they could lose the lot if it was simply left outright to them. All right then?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Doug, all the very best. And the time is just past 9.5 minutes to 10. Good morning, Joan. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I'm loyal.
That's good. How can I help you?
I would just want a couple of questions, if you don't mind,
sure.
About wills.
Sure.
Am I able to nominate my as an executive to will my son-in-law?
You can.
Because he's married to one of my daughters. I have four children. Now, so for argument's sake, one of them predeceases me. Does their will automatically come in and affect the outcome of mine, or should I just say leave it to the remaining three?
Well, the common thing for people to do, Joan, would be to provide that if one of their children passes away, then the share of the estate would go to their children. So
yes,
that's
there's only one thing wrong with that.
Yes.
Only two of them have children.
Well, that's okay. So if the others don't have children, if they don't survive you, then their benefit under the estate is deemed, so they wouldn't receive their share, so it would go to the other children. So in that situation, you would have a clause which says something to the effect, I leave the whole of my estate to such of my children as shall be known to survive me, and if more than one, in equal shares. But if any child fails to survive me but has children, then the share of the estate that they would have received will go to their children.
Okay.
Okay, so you can certainly do that without any problems whatsoever.
Thank you very much.
Okay, then, Joan. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 7.5 minutes to 10 right here. 5520888 is the phone number if you're needing free legal advice today. We're into that last 10 minutes of the program, so if you do need advice today, please get on that telephone quickly. 5520888. And we say good morning to Ellie. G'day, Ellie. How are you?
Good morning, John. John, many years ago, my husband used to do mortgage lending with solicitors.
Yes.
Is that still done today?
Not very much, Ellie. In fact, I think there are very few firms that are still doing it. They have mainly, in the main, become specialist firms that do nothing but mortgage lending. So, but there certainly are still some around, particularly on the Gold Coast. I can think of at least three that are still involved in three or four actually that are still involved in mortgage lending, but it's not very common within the legal profession generally.
Thank you.
Okay, then, Ellie, all the very best.
Names, or how do you find these?
Well, I think if you could ring the Queensland Law Society, and they could probably give you the names of the firms that are specialising in mortgage lending, or you could take a look in the yellow pages of the phone directory. I should imagine there would be provision in there about firms that are involved in mortgage lending as well.
You personally don't do it?
No, no, we don't.
Thank you.
Okay, then, Ellie, all the very best. Bye now. And time just continues to roll along. We're just coming up to 5.5 minutes to 10. 5520888 is the number. And Barbara, we have Barbara online. Good morning. How are you, Barbara?
Very well, thanks, John.
How can I help?
My query is, we moved up from New South Wales over 12 months ago. It's in regard to the power of attorneys, and enduring power attorneys. Now, I've been told they're not acceptable in Queensland. Mm. Now, I'm wondering, my husband has had a stroke. That was before we came up here, and he has some sort of... He does have some brain damage as a result of it. And I don't think there's anybody who would accept him as being able to redo one.
Right. Now, with the power of attorney that you made in New South Wales, there are actually two documents down there. You've got the power of attorney document, and then you also have a guardianship document. Did you do the two or just the one?
No,
you have both. Barbara, to the best of my knowledge, those documents would be acceptable in Queensland. I think there is, I'm fairly sure the legislation in Queensland provides that documents from interstate are acceptable. And if you've done the two documents, most importantly, they would be valid for the enduring power of attorney from New South Wales, strangely enough, is only in relation to financial matters, but the enduring guardianship document covers personal and health matters, whereas in Queensland, the document that we have up here, the enduring power of attorney, you can make it for all of those all of those powers in the one document.
Yes, thanks very much for that.
Okay, I hope that helps.
You.
All the very best.
Thank you. Bye.
And we say good morning to Kathy. G'day, Kathy. How are you?
Hello.
Yes, Kathy. How are you today?
Oh, good. Is that you, John?
It is indeed. How can I help you?
Good. Yes, I heard you say something before about a testamentary trust.
Yes.
And I was going to ask you to explain that to me because I have only one child, and she's married, and I have a grandson, and I'm concerned about in the future, like just the way things have panned out. You know, that she doesn't seem to be happily married.
Yes.
And I think you said that if you don't take precautions, and all that could go where you don't want it to go?
Yes. Well, certainly in the circumstances you're outlining, Kathy, I think a testamentary trust in your will would be a very worthwhile thing to consider. What you need to do is to make an appointment and go and see a lawyer that specialises in that area of succession law. Because setting up testamentary trusts, but most importantly, setting them up correctly so that they'll actually achieve the outcome that you want is very, very important. So quite often I've seen in my practice trusts that have been set up where the daughter, for example, is the primary beneficiary, the executor and trustee of the will, and the appointor under the testamentary trust. Well, that's absolutely useless because that person would have all the elements of effective control, so it wouldn't be effective at all. So as long as you get sound advice in relation to the subject, then yes, I think it would be a very worthwhile thing for you to consider.
And then what happens with that? How is it sort of worked? You know,
well, it's basically like having a family trust that people might have during their lifetime, only a testamentary trust is established under your will. It only comes into existence on your death, and there will be a trustee appointed for that. But look, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, Kathy. We're just pressing up to the news, so I'll have to leave it. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, I'll look forward to being back with you again next week. We have Jean online. Please stay there, and I'll speak to you now. Until next week, as always, goodbye and God bless.